This is part 9 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine by Dr. Emmanuel Josephson from 1948. Watson Davis talks about menace of medicine censorship. The corrupt, dishonest, and dangerous situation which the proposed censorship would create was eloquently portrayed by Watson Davis, editor of the Science Service, as follows, quote, "Just as the treatment of a patient is left to the experience and judgment of the physician within the wide limits of legal statutes and medical ethics, so the writing of medical science cannot be restricted by rules and regulations other than the experience, judgment, and morality of the reporter and publisher, controlled by the laws of libel and the First Amendment of the Constitution. Suppress by force of a censorship the possibility of publishing even the most unsocial and heretical medical opinion, and you have injected into the body politic the cultures of a vile disease, the intolerance that leads to dictatorship. I believe that this attitude must be maintained, even though the psychiatrist and psychologist will agree that thoughts, motives, and ideals can be damaged by poisonous ideas as fatally as bodies can be made ill by chemicals and bacteria. Opinion, both public and professional, rather than law or clique censorship, must police the popularization of medicine. The incompetents, the sly distorters, gold-poisoned pens that serve other than the public through the press, must, and I am confident, will be eliminated by the general recognition of their misdeeds. Wholesome public controversy should illumine honest differences of judgment in science reporting. But I would rather see a return to the inglorious days of careless, misunderstanding reporting of science than see a secret or open censorship imposed directly or indirectly upon the press. It is of public concern if dominant views within any scientific group tend to suppress minority or unconventional opinions." Unquote. But later accepts censorship by AMA. "More important truths have never been uttered in a spirit of humbug and sham. Within less than 1 year after this pretty speech, Watson Davis, his Science Service, and the National Association of Science Writers had completely submitted to the dictation and censorship of the rackets of organized medicine, all medical news. Thanks to the censorship, medical news became entirely secondary to propaganda and publicity for the 57 different varieties of medical and social service rackets. The press succumbed to the blandishments of the numerous pressure groups of medical specialty organizations set up for the sole purpose of gaining the spotlight of the news for their bosses and of their, quote, public relations councils, unquote. Even editor Henry R. Luce and sub-editor Frank Norris of Time have succumbed to his blandishments. Fishbein has intimated in his, quote, sedatives and tonics, unquote. Free advertising for medical bosses insured. Now that medical news has assumed for the press and its editors the complexion of publicity and propaganda primarily, it has become the vogue of prominent hospitals and clinics and their physicians and surgeons to employ publicity agents. Fishbein acknowledges and justifies this in his Fads and Quackery in Healing, on page 337, as follows, quote, A great clinic, if properly organized, must have its publicity department. In this way, the name of any clinic may be brought prominently to the people. I say maybe, perhaps I should say has been. He explains that representatives of clinics must appear at medical meetings, read papers, broadcast their work by motion pictures, have their quote-unquote leaders give interviews containing, quote, statements sufficiently fantastic to catch the front page and sufficiently scientific to avoid too great condemnation by medical colleagues, unquote. And exploit discoveries of, quote, research workers who are working contentedly in their cubby holes, unquote. Characteristically, he does not discern the contradiction between these public activities and the AMA's, quote-unquote, code of ethics, which enjoins, quote, it is unprofessional to procure patients by indirection, or by indirect advertisement, or by furnishing or inspiring newspapers and magazine comments, unquote. Propaganda supplants news. The function of the Public Relations Council is to purchase from the editors of publications the issuance of news stories for their employers. Though direct purchase is regarded as crude and quote-unquote unethical, hypocrisy and elastic conscience have made indirect purchase by gift or favor, combined where necessary with advertising pressure, quote, accepted practice, unquote. This hypocritic quote-unquote ethics makes it possible for the Public Relations Council and publicity men to charge exorbitant fees for their services. Thus, one of their number who specializes in social service publicity and advertises the list of his clientele, including the federal government, the Russell Sage Foundation, the Welfare Council of New York City, and the National Association for the Prevention of Blindness, circularizes prospective clientele with a fee list. He sells his talents and the news columns which they command at $25 a phone call, $40 an hour, $150 a day, $500 a week, and $25,000 a year. A large part of the funds of the medical and social service rackets are now expended in payment of these procurers and panders of the printed word. Newspapers and magazines have become largely perverted to publicity and propaganda media. No longer is news defined in terms of, quote, man bite dog, unquote. It is evaluated in terms of, quote, who is the publicity man and how liberal is he, unquote. Much to the convenience of the propagandists, newspaper syndicates have made it possible to pervert and poison the news of whole chains of newspapers and periodicals. The news empires of the Hearsts and the Munseys have been swallowed by the empires of the Rockefellers, and the Associated Press has moved its offices, as have the Times Fortune Life Group, into Rockefeller's Radio City. The Daily News and the Chicago Tribune are owned by their kin. Science writers develop quote-unquote ethics. The National Association of Science Writers has followed the trend to justify the defection from the ideals which they have professed, and as a balm to their consciences, they have adopted another of the hypocritic, quote-unquote, ethical codes affected by professions that pretend to hold themselves aloof from commercial practices. The principal tenets and dialectics of the code are those which justify the acceptance of censorship by vested medical and scientific interests. It runs as follows. Quote, "Science editors are incapable of judging the facts of phenomena involved in medical and scientific discovery. Therefore, they only report discoveries approved by medical, quote-unquote, authorities of rank, like Fishbein, or those presented before a body of scientific peers." Unquote. The speciousness of this, quote-unquote, ethics is obvious. If they are incapable of judging facts and phenomena, science editors are unfitted for their tasks, either as scientists or as newsmen. As a matter of fact, the shoe is on the other foot. These editors' heads have been turned by Pulitzer and other prizes, and by the adulation of those who seek publicity. They have come to fancy themselves as great scientists and prospective directors and dictators in the field of science, and to regard themselves as of higher importance than any mere scientific worker. They seem to have forgotten to be newsmen and fail to realize that if they confine themselves to reporting facts known to the medical authorities, what they report will be neither news nor discovery. Or, if they refuse to report anything that has not been presented before a scientific body, they accept the control and censorship with which the bosses of organized medicine protect their business by barring the presentation of any discoveries except those which they make or steal. Such second-hand reports of medical discovery are not news, but are advertising and publicity. One can scarcely imagine a reporter of the past waiting until an item was known to everyone before publishing it. But this seems to be the concept of news of science reporters and of the New York Times. But surrender principles. Watson Davis, in his talk at the AMA Love Fest, made it clear that the editors were acutely aware of the dangers of suppression of medical discovery by the indirect form of censorship that they now accept. Evidently, the rewards of their actions have had blunting effects on conscience. For all the direst predictions of the consequences of such censorship have come true. But the members of the NASW have showed no signs of repentance or reform. On the contrary, the same type of censorship has been extended to organizations that formerly were forums for free discussion of science, such as the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and to their publications, such as Science and Nature. They now submit publications of discoveries pertaining to medicine to censorship by organized medicine, leaving no medium free for the publication of any medical topic that merchant bosses of medicine seek to suppress to protect their interests. Marxism invades science. Most of the science writers are salaried working men who have imbibed deeply the Bismarckian propaganda. They are confirmed, quote-unquote, liberals. Thus, John O'Neill, science editor of the Herald Tribune, stated before the Fifth Estate Club that one of his criteria for the censorship of scientific discoveries is the, quote, profit motive, unquote. Since every discovery redounds to the credit and benefit of someone, this censorship works in this manner. If the discovery may increase the practice of an independent physician of no medical, political influence, it is denied publication. But if it fills the pocketbook of an influential medical politician or institution, it is insistently touted and broadcasted. Rewards of conformity. The rewards of conformity of science writers are many. For their upholding freedom of speech in science, before the institution of the present policy of censorship, I praised a group of them in my book, Glaucoma and Its Medical Treatment with Cortin, in 1937. Shortly thereafter, the same men were awarded for their reporting of the Harvard Tricentennial a Pulitzer Prize. In 1938, the National Association of Science Writers was given by the American Society for the Control of Cancer the Clement Cleveland Medal, quote, for outstanding work in the control of cancer, unquote. To Howard Blakesley, science editor of the Associated Press, was awarded in January 1940 by the American College Publicity Association the Wilson L. Fairbanks Award as, quote, the individual who has done most for the interpretation of higher education to the general public, unquote. Now that censorship has become the order of the day, the flow of honors and awards from those who seek publicity is rising. Many science editors are not men who seek out news of science for publication. They are men who are wooed with press releases in one hand and an award or stick of candy in the other. And they seem to like the candy and fall for it. Not all the awards take the form of empty honors. The rewards of orthodoxy in a science editor may be a fortune. One of them has risen to high rank in a large industrial concern where he handles science publicity and propaganda, and the company's relations with the NASW at a reputed salary of $25,000 a year. Such stories fire ambitions. Two contrasting recent incidents illustrate aptly the injuries which result from the prostituted control of the publication of medical news. Brutal Lempert, quote-unquote, window operation boosted. On the 6th of May, 1938, the New York Times carried a dispatch labeled Special to the New York Times from the meeting of the American Otological Society in Atlantic City. The headline read, Hearing Window Found Aid to Deaf. It related that Dr. Samuel J. Kopetsky had reported to the society on an ear operation for the relief of progressive deafness. The operation was not new, but was merely a modification of one described a number of years before by a French professor, Dr. Sordille. Though the operation involves risks to health and life, it gives results that are not as good as I had reported in a paper read before the Acoustical Society in America in 1933. Can be obtained from the simple and easy procedure of incision or excision of the eardrum. All these procedures have only a transient influence on the progress of the deafness. In spite of the moot value of the operation, the Times published the story. No censorship prevailed. Dr. S. J. Kopetsky is chairman of the Publicity Committee of the New York County Medical Society. Owing to the failure of verification of the data presented by the parties involved, the American Otological Society refused to publish his paper. Dr. Kopetsky sensed the full significance of their action, felt compelled to resign. Operations are always favored by organized medicine, however, as quick sources of income. In spite of the question raised regarding the veracity of the sponsors of the operation, it was vigorously boosted at a meeting of the New York Academy of Medicine in March 1940. This was the beginning of the ruthless exploitation of the Lempert fenestration, or window operation, that has caused so much maiming, misery, and total loss of hearing in the deafened. Further details are given in the appendix. Vital discovery is suppressed. Contrasting sharply with this over-eager advertising and publicizing of a grave operation of highly questionable value is the treatment accorded many vital discoveries. This was once again illustrated by the treatment recently given a fundamental medical discovery, a new and successful method of treatment of a group of diseases of the muscle nerve apparatus with vitamin E. On the 23rd of June 1939, I presented before the Essex County Optometric Society a report of successful treatment with vitamin E of a series of cases of a group of diseases, including myasthenia gravis and progressive muscular dystrophy, which had been regarded until then as hopeless disorders. Brief mention was made of the discovery in the Newark newspapers, but all reference to it was suppressed in the national press by the medical censors of the syndicate releases. Though the optometric journals carried reports of the discovery, publication of it was rejected by medical journals for the usual reasons of medical politics. The life-saving action of vitamin E has not yet been extended to the victims of the disease by the profession in even such institutions as the Mayo Clinic almost a year later. For doctors are too bigoted to learn from lay publications, and AMA and other medical journals refused to publish my life-saving discovery. I determined to attempt to give the victims of the disease its benefit by securing its publication in scientific journals which publish items of medical science. Late in 1939, I submitted to Science, the official magazine of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, of which I am a fellow, and to Nature, the British scientific magazine, the following brief report. Vitamin E therapy of myasthenia gravis. The influence of vitamin E on muscular dystrophy in animals has been reported by a number of observers. This is a report of successful therapy of myasthenia gravis and muscular dystrophy in the human with wheat germ oil and vitamin E in combination with other therapy. In early myasthenia gravis, ranging in duration from 1 to 5 years, I have had consistent success in cases that have failed to respond to other forms of treatment, with a therapy consisting of balanced dosage of ephedrine and suprarenal cortex hormone, glycocol, gelatin, high sodium chloride, and a diet rich in vitamins A, B, C, and G. Complete relief of the paresis of muscles of the eyes, face, and body was obtained. The results are lasting and contrast sharply with the ephemeral results obtained with prostigmine. We're going to stop there. This is the end of part 9 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Dr. Emmanuel Josephson from 1948.